Welcome to the Officer Media Group Roll Call Podcast. Officer Roll Call is meant to inform and entertain. Now, let's get into this episode.
Welcome to the lineup, Officer Magazine's roundup of this week's police and law enforcement news. I'm your host, Joe Vince, assistant editor for Officer Magazine. And with me today, the second day of official second day of Major League Baseball is...
Today's the second day of Major League Baseball?
It started yesterday.
Well, hi guys, this is Frank Borelli. Obviously, I don't know as much about baseball as I ought to know about baseball, but that's pretty cool. I mean, spring's here, it's time, we should be doing that.
Oh yeah, nothing better than day baseball, my opinion. So, but we're gonna get started. We have got a big show. I'm sure you know a lot of big stories this week, so Let's get rolling. Our first story out of Maryland, Baltimore, is probably the biggest story of the week anywhere. The collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. A cargo ship lost power and collided with one of the support structures, bringing the bridge down with seven cars on it. Rescuers... were able to rescue two people who had fallen into the Patapsco River. Six others unfortunately appeared to have died. Just an incredible disaster that happened. Video captured the entire thing. I'm sure everyone has seen it, of the ship out of control and just slamming right into the bridge, and the bridge just collapsing into the river. Some of you might wonder, well, why is this a police story? Well, two kind of factors of this. What's interesting is before the boat hit, they had sent out a mayday. The transit police were able to, I think they only had about 90 seconds, but they were able to shut down the bridge and keep cars off of it, stopping an even greater tragedy. And police from Baltimore City, Baltimore County, Maryland State Police, and other agencies, are members of their dive team have actually been out there in the river trying to rescue and recover the individuals who had fallen into it. Just an amazing, I can't remember ever seeing something like this happen before, to actually see the video and to see the bridge collapse like that.
It's kind of scary. So where I live, we have a very tall bridge. It's one lane in either direction. Thankfully there's no shipping traffic that really goes underneath of it. But if it collapsed, it would be an absolute devastation. One of the reasons this is a big story is because it's part of the I-95 corridor. Mm-hmm. And so you have a huge amount of traffic going, farther up the coast, New York, Philly, all that, and then down the coast. And this is actually relatively closer to the upper end of the main industry part of 95. We're going to talk about another story in a second that has to do with the water as well. We talk about the police function here and why it is a police story. Absolutely, it's a police story because of that 90-second window to stop traffic or try to clear the bridge. And unfortunately, the people that were still on the bridge were maintenance workers. They were construction folks. But then you have the recovery efforts. And when you look at who's actually searching the water and who's diving, a lot of people would assume it's a fire function or a search and rescue function. A lot of times it's police, in this case, Maryland State Police. We have this huge role all around it, but I want to get to the second story to talk more about this, but a lot of people, when they think about law enforcement, don't realize how much of what we do is in or near water. And when I say in, I mean over, like on a bridge. Mm-hmm. And when you're in full uniform, water's a major threat, because if you can't get off the gear, you're sinking like a rock. We wear a lot of weight. So if you can't get it off of you, you're drowning. And that's just the reality, unless you've had the proper water safety, water survival training to know how to get your gear off. And you have to practice every time you anytime you move your gear, you change your gear. You got a different vest, you have a different carrier. Anything changes. you've got to have your plan and be able to execute it to get that stuff off fast. It was one of the first things we learned in infantry school when I was in the Army. You know, we jump off a high dive with full gear on, and you hit the bottom hard, you know, 10 feet, 12 feet down, you hit hard. You had to take all that stuff off if you wanted to get out of the water. There was no getting to the surface without ditching gear.
Right. And, you know, that's a great way to segue. We'll kind of move into our next story too. This is out of New York City. I think last week or a recent episode, we talked about, we saw a new NYPD officer who on a slippery bridge was able to talk down a jumper. In this case, officer had seen a woman in the water, Hudson River, and immediately went into action, like you were saying, stripping off the gear and going into the frigid water to pull her to safety, and then having help from other officers on the shore to be able to pull them up, because the embankment is just a steep embankment, rocky and slick. And having to get another individual up off of that, out of the water, also waterlogged and heavy, is something that you know, no one person could be able to do. And luckily, other officers and I believe firefighters were there to help. But body camera footage captured this, and you see exactly what you were describing, Frank, of how quickly getting all of that heavy gear off, that you know, getting as much as you can off as quickly as you can, and then getting into the water to go after the person.
Yeah, and you know, you really do have it's something that officers have to be aware of, and especially if they're getting ready to go in the water. You know, we all see Hollywood happen where somebody goes running off the end of a pier and they dive in and they never took off anything, and they're in full uniform and they're rescuing the, you know, the heroes going.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we better send in a rescue crew for them too. Cause that's not reality. And we need to be aware of reality. I tip my hat to officers who do these rescues. It's absolutely a vital part of our function, our duty. I was a certified lifeguard in my youth. And the first thing that they taught us was don't jump in if you don't have to. Throw a rope, throw a rescue ring, grab a hook, something. So I think it would be interesting to have officers, and it's not something I ever got in my 40 years of training. It would be great to see officers receive kind of a basic training class on water rescue and how to, what's the process? What's the minimal risk to the officer rescue versus what's the maximum risk to the officer rescue, and what those protocols and processes look like?
Right. And, you know, I feel like we've talked about a lot of stories like this. And one of the other factors, too, is the temperature of the water. And, you know, a lot of times these are cases where people have fallen through thin ice and are in very cold water. Here was, not icy water, but at this time of year, it's really cold. And if you're going to be in there for a long time, and by long time, I mean maybe a matter of minutes, that's going to start affecting you. And yeah, I think is such a great point. There are so many different factors that I think, you know, just your common sense, you're not going to necessarily pick up on, and that training would be essential. I can just imagine that a lot of officers seeing something like this might even just, you know, your instinct is not even to take the gear off, is immediately, hey, I got to jump in and grab the person. I don't know how long
exactly
been in there.
And here's the thing. First, you don't become an additional victim. You only make it worse on the next guy if you're another additional victim. So, you know, yeah, we talk about hypothermia and how quick that can kill, how quickly it can cloud your judgment. I'm thinking we need to have a class on this, Joe.
That's something definitely, maybe an OVA or something. Who knows?
Yep.
Moving on to our next story, we're staying in New York City. Tragedy there. A New York NYPD officer shot and killed at a car stop. He was walking up to a car, an SUV that was idling in a bus stop, and as he approached, one of the passengers got out of the car and opened fire, fatally shooting him. Three suspects have been arrested in this. One of them has been charged with murder. There was security camera that caught from a long distance the shooting, and just going from is one of those scenes where you see the figure of the officer moving up to the vehicle, and then pop, 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 and screams and yells. It's just horrific. And again, we've talked before just how dangerous these traffic stops can be. It's believed, investigators feel, that this officer actually was probably interrupting either these suspects getting ready to rob someone or some place, or they were casing a business to possibly rob later, and he had interrupted this. Just a terrible tragedy there.
Yeah, and this is a perfect example in my world of how you really don't. You never know when things are going to go sideways, right? So the officer shows up, and I hate this word routine. I know a lot of yeah. news stories, and we just pull the headlines from other syndicated sources, but the word routine should never, ever exist in law enforcement lexicon. We should not use that word. But here you go. It's in, right there in the headline. It's shootout during a routine car stop. You never know when it's going to go sideways. You never know how fast it's going to go sideways. You never know how many bad guys you're going to face or what kind of firepower you're going to face. And this is a video that shows it. And I wish I could get everybody out there who hates the police to watch this video. I mean, they might celebrate, but maybe it would make them realize the risk that it's hard to articulate. So the risk isn't present 24/7. But it's a potential 24/7. So we have to act as if it's present 24/7.
Yeah. And it, this is a perfect example of just seeing how quickly that all changes. And what, yeah, it's, this is your, you look at the video and you're seeing just passersby. It's not an isolated street. It's very public, people walking by. It wasn't like this was a dark alley or something. One of the other things I wanted to kind of point out too is the video keeps rolling after the shooting, and you see the response by the other officers to immediately help their fallen colleague. I'm having trouble putting into words too, just watching them scramble to get this individual to a hospital quickly and administer life-saving measures. But you kind of see the response then you're trained to do when someone is injured or shot. They just swarmed around that area to get this person help.
Yes, and as they should. You know, I don't think we get enough trauma care training, and unfortunately, when an officer is shot, the risk of death can either be, or the reality of death can either be immediate, or it can be a minute away, or it can be a half hour away. But the right care of any kind in any circumstance extends that time, and that's got to be our goal.
Moving on to our next story, this is out of Florida, and this is going to sound joking, and I'm not quite mean this in a humorous way, but this is a very Florida story. A shootout broke out at a domestic disturbance with a Hardy County sheriff's deputy was in a gunfight with a domestic battery suspect in front of a home. And that deputy was joined in the gunfight by the victim's father, who grabbed his gun and started firing. This describing it sounds like something out of a movie where, everyone's picking up a gun and joining in the fight. But I got to imagine for an officer, that is a scary thing in the sense of you don't know if that person is on your side or if now you've got to worry about two places to of gunfire coming from. Thankfully, that wasn't the case. But unless this individual said, "Hey, I'm here," you know, there's no way to sort of indicate, "Hey, this person isn't also an offender as well."
So, you know, yes, it's a scary thing when you have multiple sources of gunfire and you initially don't know, am I facing multiple opponents or did somebody join the fight on my side? And this is why we encourage off-duty officers, if they come up on a situation where an officer needs assistance, you know, especially, like I said, when you're off-duty, you're in plain clothes. If you can have a badge visible, great. But is the officer actually going to be able to look at you long enough to see it and identify you as an officer? You've got to be screaming, you know, that you're there to help, that you're an off duty, whatever the reality is. But when you're in that situation, it becomes very clear, very quick, who's shooting at you and who's not. I remember a time, real quick war story, a friend of mine, another police officer of mine, we were walking out of a municipal town hall and there was a infamous roadway at the other end of the park from this town hall. So you have the town hall and then you have this big public park and there's a couple of soccer fields and everything else. But this infamous roadway is probably 250, 300 yards away. And we're walking out. We had been attending a community meeting and the mayor's coming out with us and gunfire erupts over on this infamous street. And we both look and you can see the muzzle flashes real long. Mm-hmm. And we look back and the mayor's on the ground and we're like, "Are you okay?" And he goes, "Yeah. Aren't you scared? They're shooting." Like, well, if they were shooting at us, they'd be little round muzzle flashes. The real long ones mean they're not shooting at us. And he's like, "Damn, y'all. Okay. Y'all actually pay attention. It's real, really, you find out real fast what it's like you've been shot at."
Oh, that is the difference between, you know, possibly survival and death is knowing that what the muzzle flash looks like, what you're looking for, and how to prepare for it,
how to react to it.
Yes. Moving on to our next story, staying in Florida. This 6 months ago, Tallahassee police officer Caleb Babb was seriously wounded when he was ambushed while responding to a call. The department released a video of an interview of Officer Babb talking about that incident where he was ambushed and releasing the body camera footage from it. There's a quote here talking about, let me see. He's "My memory's kind of fuzzy about what I did. So I know I was at work and then the call came about and I kind of went into work mode because it was my call." That quote struck me as just here. He had this shooting happen. He was seriously injured and the trauma from it, both probably physical and mental, you know, is, his recollection now is a little fuzzy. And I think that's one of the things we don't necessarily realize in these types of incidents, what can happen. One of the things he was very, you know, he expressed was his thanks for his fellow officers who were there, who helped him, who got him, helped get him to the hospital and helped him survive. He is currently rehabbing and obviously he wants to get back to work. You know, a horrible thing, but it's great to see him recovering and getting better, getting stronger.
I want to congratulate Officer Babb. Somebody ought to write this man a commendation. And here's why. He was struck in the leg. And the article says blood streamed from the wound. Now, his first response, according to this article, was to get a tourniquet on his leg and his justification, not just to keep him alive, but to keep him in the fight.
Yep.
That's a different level. All right. Trying to keep myself alive is one thing. Trying to keep myself alive and still be able to function, that's a different level. He said, "I look down. I have bright red arterial blood on my boot." If that's a true statement, if he identified it correctly, and I haven't read the medical reports, I don't know what the injuries were, blah, blah, blah. But if he had arterial bleeding in his leg, putting the tourniquet on his leg saved his life. He had 40 to 60 mm-hmm. seconds and he was going to be dead. So I'm really glad he did what he needed to do. I loved his mental outlook. some people might be critical of some of his fellow officers, as part of the article talks about another officer praying. If you're going to be critical of that, I don't care. I don't want to hear from you. You know, there's an old saying that there's no atheists in a foxhole.
Mm-hmm.
If their beliefs and their faith and that prayer did anybody any good and helped anybody in any way, they should have done it 10 times over. You know, a lot of surviving a gunshot wound is psychological. There's records of people been shot with a 22, hits them in the belt buckle, and the belt buckle stops the bullet, and the person falls over dead because they believe in they believe I've been shot, I have to die.
Yeah.
And anything that helps you set that kind of defeatist attitude aside is awesome. So yeah, congrats to this officer. I think he deserves a commendation. I hope he gets back to work, full recovery, no issues.
You brought up the keeping in the fight. I did a story on tactical medics that's going to be coming out in the upcoming issue. And that was one of the things they talked about. With part of their job is not just to take, you know, if going out with these SWAT units, if someone is wounded, it's not just to make sure that, to treat them and move them on. It's to keep them in the fight if they can. Yep. And that, yeah, very much something that goes into the training. Moving on to our next story. This is out of Ohio and Cleveland, where good news hearing that they have seen one of the biggest increase in years in their police recruits. And this comes on the heels of having one of the lowest academy classes in 25 years. So it's so great. This is starting to see stories and reports of departments getting increases in their recruits and their applications. And that's great to hear.
Well, and it's because of the way they've changed their recruiting practices. So they've changed some of their age ranges and other restrictions, at least 10 of these trainees. So they've got 52 recruits coming into a class. 10 of them, so 20% of them, are between 40 and 54. Those are old recruits for law enforcement, okay?
Yeah.
And that's coming from a guy who's 60. Those are old recruits for law enforcement. To do a 20-year career, to put that in perspective, you get into it at 60 or 40, you're not retiring till you're 60. And if you have a 25-year retirement program, you're not going to retire till 65. You're still going to be actively working every day, full-time, right? So number one, they've changed the ages, and I'd love to see that. Those people between 40 and 54, that one-fifth of that class is going to bring more knowledge and wisdom and experience to the street, and they will be, and I'm not trying to undervalue the younger people, those older people will bring greater value to the street. They will solve problems better because they have more life experience to do it with. They'll be more compassionate. And then also when you look, they've got a 50% pay increase for their time in the academy and a $5,000 sign-on bonus. Cleveland's going out of their way to make it an attractive hire and an attractive retention. And kudos to them. I love to see this. We need to get more officers on the street. We all know that.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is good news. Moving on to our next story. This again confirms that the 2024 is the year of the front loader chase. This is out of Georgia. Gwinnett County police officer got in a chase with a disgruntled employee. He took off in a front loader, heavy construction piece of equipment. What's interesting is the chase just wasn't between a cruiser and a front loader. One of the officers actually commandeered another front loader and actually used it to engage the fleeing disgruntled employee. It's just a crazy chase. I don't know what it is that the law breaking element of the world needs to jump into construction equipment and take off in it, but apparently that's the thing. Maybe it's a new TikTok thing that I'm not aware of.
So I don't know, but you know, there was a movie a long time ago. God, who did it star? It was the guy who played the Rockford Files. I can't remember his name.
James Garner,
and I think the movie was called Tank.
He was
Sergeant Major who was trying to get his son out of jail and a corrupt cop or this or that. So he commandeers a tank. you know, no, this was not going to be a front loader versus patrol car, patrol SUV. I'm not sure with the weight of the front loader that if they pulled out a SWAT armored personnel carrier, it would have done any good. So really, and I kudos to the officers for their quick thinking and somebody having the skill. I couldn't jump up in a front loader and figure out how to make it go.
Oh, no.
I don't know how to do that. So somebody else had that skill. Fantastic. It was either that or they were going to have to set up a sniper someplace and take this guy out behind the controls of the front loader. I mean, there aren't a lot of options here, and he can do a ton of damage, create all kinds of mayhem. So I'm glad to see the creative solution that was found very quickly.
Yeah, and definitely check out the chase. It's one of the more interesting of these chases, just to see two front loaders go at it.
It's not dueling banjos and Wayne Smokey and the Bandit. This is something entirely different.
So, and hopefully next week there'll probably be another one of these. Moving on to our final story. This is out of California, where a carjacker was gonna stay on this car for as long as he could. Lathrop police were pursuing a suspect in a domestic violence case. When that suspect's car, their tire became disabled, got out, and they were on the interstate, tried to carjack two cars. On the second car, he couldn't get into the vehicle, and the driver decided to speed off. Well, this suspect decided, I'm going to stay on it. And for a little while, he is hanging onto the window of the car while the police cruiser is following. The driver did stop, and police were able to apprehend the person, but an odd chase.
It is, but the reason I really like this story, Joe, and reason I wanted to talk about it is because one of the best defenses a person could have behind the wheel of a car is an awareness of their surroundings and clearance to move. If a carjacker comes at me to carjack my car and I drive, well, here's reality. He ain't going to grab hold of my car and stop me. You know what I mean? He's not going to just grab the door and all of a sudden I can't drive away. I got enough horsepower in my car to move 2,000 pounds behind the car. So this 200, 300 pound guy, 400 pound, 500 pound guy, doesn't matter. He wants to grab hold of the door. Rock on, dude. My car's winning this fight. Obviously, weapons play a whole different role, but right. I love this story because dude's being dragged down the road in a pair of shorts. The road is not forgiving.
No.
The longer he goes, the more damage he does to himself. It's just this, like, look, people, if you're behind a wheel of a car, somebody tries to carjack you, if you have room to move forwards, backwards, or sideways, turn the wheel, the acceleration pedal, the long skinny one on the right, put it to the floor, and then, you know, let the car win the fight.
Why ridiculous jumping onto that car and holding onto it. But I got to figure, you know what? There are not a lot of good options. if not going to jail is your goal, you really don't have a lot of good options standing there in the middle of the interstate without a vehicle, and you have police right on your tail.
He's really not a smart guy, right? Number one, he's standing in the middle of an interstate.
Yes.
That makes you a smearable target. Number two, he decides he's going to try to carjack people. Dude, yes, you don't want to go to jail, but you're risking death to avoid imprisonment. And yeah. I get that there are people to do that, but that's just the height of stupid to me. Anyway, I view this as our dumb criminal story for the week, and kudos to the driver of the car. I think the front loader face-off chase is, while maybe not our feel-good story of the week, it's still pretty awesome, and the officers did a great job.
Yes. It's our creative thinking story of the week. That's it for us. Again, thanks very much for listening. As I mentioned earlier, it's baseball season, so I'm thrilled. It doesn't matter well, I'm a Yankees fan, doesn't matter what happens, really. I just become more relaxed. It just, everything kind of slows down. I'm getting ready for summer. Everything's hey, Joe, great. Yes.
What are you doing for Easter?
Just relaxing. Nothing special.
I keep forgetting it's Easter because my wife and I don't. Too. I mean, we're not the go to church every Sunday kind of people, and we don't have any immediate family. I mean, my in-laws are 5 hours away, so there's like nobody that we have family Easter with in the area. So we're going to commune, weather permitting. We're going to commune with our Harley Davidsons and a couple hundred miles of roadway for Easter.
Oh, that'll be great. Well, hopefully the weather will work out for you.
Looking good so far.
And hopefully everyone out there, you have a happy Easter and just enjoy the weekend and come back next week.
If they got to work Easter, go home to your family. It's Easter. You get stuck working a holiday. You're already sacrificing. Make sure you go home to your family and enjoy it with your family. That's my last word. And you said stay safe. Cool.
Take care.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Lineup. Please remember, the opinions voiced are not those of Officer Media Group or Endeavor Business Media, but only those speaking those opinions themselves. Thank you and stay safe.